Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Football fans, welcome to another episode of The Call Sheet. Kevin Smith with you. Glad to have the opportunity to bring you this show on a weekly basis, especially now, given that the NFL offseason is really off and running. We are 2 weeks into the free agency period. There's so much going on. We got a lot to get to in today's show. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about free agency, a little bit about college football and what it's like to be a college football player. And that's going to be a prelude to a conversation in part two with Sean Gurley, Big G, of the Steel Curtain Network and FFSN, who will talk about his experience as a Division I football player and then what some of the young men preparing for the NFL draft are going through. And then we're going to break down some draft news or some draft prospect news, I should say, in the second part of the show. So let's jump right in, man. Free agency. The free agency period has been incredible so far, especially at the quarterback position. And yeah, being a Steelers fan, it's been a fascinating 2 weeks. In a normal free agency period, the Steelers landing a player like Patrick Queen, the ex-Baltimore Raven linebacker, that would have been the headline. But that's almost a forgotten story now, given what's transpired at the quarterback position in Pittsburgh. I mean, first you had the Russell Wilson signing, and then you had the Kenny Pickett trade, and then the Justin Fields trade. I mean, between articles and podcasts and video breakdowns and film rooms, et cetera, I mean, that's enough to keep content creators like myself busy all the way through the draft. So, I mean, Pittsburgh alone, with what they've done at the quarterback position has been fascinating, but it's not just the Steelers. I mean, many of the teams in the league are being aggressive at the quarterback position. I think there's this combination of increased salary cap, an exceptionally large number of quarterbacks available either through free agency or trade. And the fact that just about everybody in the league realizes that you need, if not elite level performance at the quarterback position, then certainly a quarterback who is playing good enough football to be able to take you into January. I think the combination of all of those things is creating this market frenzy. But the activity in this year's period is unlike anything we've ever seen before. Listen to the following names. There have been 20 significant quarterbacks who have changed teams in the last 2 weeks. Wilson, Fields, Pickett, already mentioned them. Kirk Cousins, Gardner Minshew, Sam Darnold, Jimmy Garoppolo, Joe Flacco, Mac Jones, Desmond Ridder, Tyler Huntley, Sam Howell, Josh Dobbs, Jacoby Brissett, Jameis Winston, Tyrod Taylor, Mitchell Trubisky, Marcus Mariota, Mason Rudolph, and Drew Locke, all of whom have changed teams in the past few weeks. 20 quarterbacks. And more are going to be added in the upcoming draft, where the top three picks are likely to be quarterbacks, and there could be as many as six that go in the first round. So how do you keep track of all this? I mean, we could devise a pretty good trivia game based solely on the new locations of these quarterbacks. I mean, all right, let's do this right now. Let's test a few out. Okay, quiz question. Where is Marcus Mariota right now? Where's Marcus Mariota? Who is he signed with? Is the answer A, Minnesota, B, Washington, or C, San Francisco. All right, ready? Give yourself 5 points if you answered the Commanders. Ding, ding, ding. All right, what about their former quarterback? What about Sam Howell? He was their quarterback. It looked for a time last season like he might be the quarterback of the future there. But he's gone. So where's he? Is he in A, Arizona, B, Chicago, or C, Seattle? The answer to that question is the Seahawks. I mean, seriously, the NFL might need to do like a meet and greet before next season begins so that we can all catch up on it. And, you know, this is a subject that we're going to take a deeper dive on next week on the call sheet when I try to make sense of how these moves went down specifically. Why did certain players end up in specific locations? What teams wound up with the guys that they really wanted? What teams wound up with consolation prizes? I mean, there's really so much to unpack on the subject of quarterback movement in free agency, on what it tells us about individual teams and what it tells us about the league as a whole. So that's what we're going to get to in more detail next week. Right now, though, I want to pivot. I want to talk about something personal, if you'll permit me, because this is episode 49 of our show. And as our regular listeners know, I always do a little tribute each week to a player who wore the number of the episode. And again, if you'll indulge me, this week, I'd like to talk about my own football career a little bit, if you can call it a career, because 49 was the number I wore in college, and that number means a lot to me. I mean, there isn't a whole lot to say about my quote-unquote career. I was a 5'10", 195-pound safety who played at a Division III school. I mean, I was a good hitter, and I was a good tackler. I liked the physical element of the game. That's probably a product of growing up a Steelers fan and idolizing Jack Lambert. I mean, but I was really too slow to play safety at the bigger schools and too small to play linebacker. I went and I looked at some of those schools. I took some recruiting visits at Villanova and James Madison. I stayed with the guys there. And in the end, after kind of hanging around the team a little bit, I thought I'd just wind up sitting the bench at those places. I just didn't think I was physically gifted enough. So I found my way to a D3 school and it was great, man. I got four varsity letters and got to start for 3 years. It was great. Even without the glitz and the glamour of the D1 life, I had a great experience. I mean, I had typical football experiences. I dislocated my shoulder. I tore my labrum, courtesy of a 230-pound fullback who absolutely laid me out. I mean, that wasn't so much fun. I got a concussion, only one diagnosed concussion. There were probably several others where I, quote, got my bell rung, you know, as everybody liked to say back in the day. I mean, but those were typical risks inherent to the sport. But the memories that I made and the stories I can tell, they're really special. And I'm grateful for, you know, what it took to play college football helped shape my character and my work ethic and my confidence and really the person who I am today. And, you know, I know this is not a universal sentiment. Experiences vary from place to place. My best friend from high school, he did have the D1 experience. He earned a full ride to Pitt as an offensive lineman, where he was a teammate of future NFL players like Mark Stepnoski and Louis Riddick and Alex Van Pelt. And he started several games at Pitt. He got to play on national TV in places like Beaver Stadium at Penn State and Notre Dame Stadium. But he didn't really enjoy the experience. He kind of felt like the coaches there treated players like pawns. They were sort of nameless and faceless. You were useful when you were healthy and obedient and disposable if you got injured or if you didn't want to compromise yourself for the program. I guess in many ways, we all know that Division I college football is a business. You're getting your tuition paid for. And in return, you're expected to comply with whatever it is the program demands of you. But, you know, for my good friend, the fun of playing the game suffered from it. And that's really kind of what I want to focus on, man. The fun, the joy of the game. And we're going to talk to Big G about this in the second part of the show. Again, my experience was different. I never played in front of a crowd of more than about 10,000 people. And then other than a run-in with future New York Jets receiver Wayne Krabet, when we played his team at Hofstra University, I never went up against anybody who made the pros. But there were lots of really talented guys playing at the D3 level, and many of them had the skills to be big time players, or they had the toughness. They just lacked the size or the speed. I mean, they hadn't won the genetic lottery, so to speak, that the bigger schools mandated. But some of them were really talented and they could hit, man. You know what I hated to see? I hated to see opposing guards who were like 6'2 and like 265, 270 pounds, because those guys could move and they were nasty. And then on sweep plays, when I'd have to come flying down into the alley and take them on to set an edge, it was not comfortable, man. It was not a comfortable experience. My mentor at the strong safety position was a guy named Louis Diaz, who stood about 5'9 and was maybe 180 pounds, but he could hit like a truck. And he taught me this technique on how to dip your shoulder at the point of contact into a puller in a way that would allow you to kind of absorb the blow and pop back up. And the first time I ever tried it, I got run over like roadkill. And I remember he said to me, "You'll get it eventually, but it's going to suck until you do." And he was right, man. It kind of sucked, because those 270-pound guards at the D3 level, they could hit. And the fullbacks back then, everybody used a fullback back then. There were some nasty guys who went about 6 foot and 225 pounds. And, you know, they were just too slow to play at the big schools, but they could bench press 400 pounds and they would lower their shoulders and they'd run through you like you were a child if you tackled them too high. You know, you definitely wanted to get your shoulder pads down on the shins of guys like that. You know, I had great teammates who were fun to play with too, and whom I made a lot of memories with. I remember my playing partner at safety was a guy named Dave Balkin, a wild man from Long Island. Most of the guys I met from Long Island, they were out of their minds in some way. I don't know if it was something in the water out there or what, man, but the Long Island guys, they were a special kind of nuts. And Dave and I, we developed this yell that we would shout out as we took the field. It was like this senseless thing. I'm embarrassed to actually replicate it right now, but it kind of was this sort of yelp that just sort of went, yeah, you know, and we would scream it out as we ran out in the field. It had no meaning. It was utterly senseless, but it got you ready. You know, it got you, it allowed you to release all the nerves you had and all the energy. And I don't like making war analogies when it comes to football, because war and football are by no means the same. And I will never pretend to know what something as intense and terrifying as military combat is like. But when you went onto the football field, you know, that was like going into battle of sorts. And in college, even at the D3 level, where, you know, guys were big and they were fast and they hit hard and it was intense and you had to ready yourself. And so, you know, running onto the field, shouting out that senseless shout with Dave, which maybe was the football equivalent to what the great poet Walt Whitman described in his epic poem, Song of Myself, as the barbaric yawp that he sounded over the rooftops of the world. I mean, I think that was our barbaric yawp, getting ourselves ready to engage, man. And I'll never forget that. You never forget that. Every once in a while, I just catch myself going, yeah, you know, for no particular reason, but just because it, now it makes me laugh, you know. And really, that, you know, that was college football in a nutshell. Everybody I played was good. They were all good. They'd all excelled in high school. Only about 6% of all the guys who play high school football ever make it to college at any level. Only 1% of those high school players ever make it to the Division I level. But it wasn't many that made it to D3 either. None of us were elite and none of us were going to the NFL. But the thing was, we loved playing and we wanted to keep it going. And we were grateful to have the opportunity to do so. So yeah, love of the game, man. Sometimes I wonder, right? Is it still there? I wonder where it's gone, because it's a new world. Everybody's got a personal trainer now, man. Everybody goes to a speed guy, or they got a quarterback coach, right? Or they got a guy that they work with, you know, that they're paying $100 an hour. Kids are worried about NIL deals. You got for-profit spring leagues that you got to pay $800 to join, and with no guarantee that the coaching will be sound. Professional football as a business, everybody's long accepted that. And even the Division I level, to a degree, we've long accepted that that's a business. But now when I think about the degree to which it's become true, when I listen to Nick Saban talk about stepping away from coaching because his players are more interested in getting paid than in getting better, and when I look at how even the youth level has been infiltrated with the coaching version of carnival barkers promising scholarships to 12-year-olds in return for them forking over $100 an hour to go through some drills they probably learned on YouTube. I mean, it's madness. I mean, it's capitalism in its purest and most aggressive form. And I, you know, I probably sound like an angry old man yelling at the wind, you know, yelling at that thing that's so much bigger than me and out of my control. I hope that there's still room for love of the game in this new world where everything feels like a business, you know, for the sake of the players and the memories and, you know, for running onto the field, screaming like a banshee, like with a lunatic like Dave Balkan, man. I hope that young guys are still playing for that. So we're going to take a break. And on the other side, we're going to talk to a guy with his own college football experience to share, someone who did play at the Division I level and has some excellent remembrances of that. And he's going to talk about that and about getting ready for the draft, what it is that these guys go through. And then he's going to talk about some of his favorite draft prospects in this year's upcoming draft. So stay tuned. We'll be back with Sean Gurley, Big G, one of the great contributors here at FFSN. Be right back. All right, welcome back to the call sheet. Kevin Smith with you. And in part two, we're going to turn our attention to college football and talk a little bit more about the college football experience, man, and the guys who do it because of the love of the game, the guys who do it with bigger aspirations. And I got a great guest here who's going to share some of his experiences as a Division I college football player, Sean Gurley, Big G. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Hey, man, thanks, Coach KT, man. I appreciate being on the show, man. And before we even get started, man, let's go Steelers, man. Let's go Steelers. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and, you know, this is an NFL show, but we're not going to hide our prejudices here, man. You know,
oh, absolutely.
Loyalties.
Yeah.
Sean and I got two things in common as fans. Mm-hmm. We're both Ohio State fans, and we're both Steeler fans. So we're going to talk about all that stuff. But first of all, you know, Sean, I'll give you the listeners a little background. He's an All-State high school player out of Lima, Ohio, which is, has had some legendary programs. I mean, I know that name as a New Jersey high school coach. I know I'm familiar with, you know, some of the legendary programs out there, Massillon and some of those great programs. Went on to play junior college ball in Iowa, and then landed at the University of Arkansas, man, where he played tight end for Danny Ford. Had a great experience in the SEC. For a knee injury kind of derailed Sean's career, and he has since moved on, is a licensed therapist, a high school football coach, and, man, he does a host of podcasts here at FFSN. So, again, man, welcome. And if you would, man, talk a little bit about your own experience as a player. You know, what was it like there playing at Arkansas at that level of football?
Well, it wouldn't be fair to really talk about the whole deal at Arkansas unless I explain to you how I got there, because it was totally by accident.
Right? Sure.
I was out of high school. I was recruited by a lot of MAC schools, University of West Virginia, Ball State, Eastern Michigan, University of Toledo, Bowling Green State University, all whatnot. You know, I didn't get a full look at Ohio State, but I was brought in for some camps. Right. I could even possibly even went to Louisville as well. Well, I was declared a Proposition 48 out of high school, and some of your listeners are out there probably have no clue about what Prop 48 is. That means back in the day, you know, because I'm an older guy, you had to have a composite score on the SAT of a certain points, or on the ACT, you had to have an 18. So I took the ACT test three times and scored a 17 three times. Little did I know, I had an undiagnosed learning disability, which is called dyslexia. And I found that out when I traveled all the way across the country. I had never been in anywhere outside of Ohio. And I landed at Waldorf College in Forest City, Iowa, with Coach David Ballerstoff, man, one of the greatest coaches in junior college history. And there I got the help that I needed concerning, you know, my learning disability. When I got there, I was buried on the depth chart because my father died right before I got there. My father died in June, and I had to report to camp by August. So I was like fifth on the depth chart. Little did I know that there was going to be a horrific injury for a guy who played the tight end position. So here I come late to the junior college camp. I'm in shape. At the time, I'm about 6 foot two and a half, about 265, 270 pounds, but I ran a really good 40 time. And the junior college coach looked at me and he said, "Can you catch?" And I was like, "Yeah." So they put me through some drills and all whatever else. And, you know, they was like, "Whoa, this guy can really play." So that ended up how I got to play the position of tight end in college, because I was never played that position before. So I was a great inline blocker and all whatever else. But the issue was having the ability to catch the ball across the middle of the field and or stretch the defense. That got me on the radar for a lot of different big time schools, Division I schools across the country. The University of Arkansas was leaving the Southwestern Conference, had moved to the SEC Conference right when I transitioned. And so Coach Danny Ford was coming from Clemson. He was like, "Listen, I got to get athletes. It doesn't matter how I get them." And so I was able to get a scholarship to go down. I could have went to University of Wyoming. I could have went to San Diego State University. I could have went to the University of Northern Iowa. It was crazy. I would have played with Kurt Warner. But that's a whole nother story. So right. By having that and then being able to go down there and play that, you know, at that level, the transition was just, you know, like when you jump from high school to junior college, the game got fast. But when you jump from junior college to D1, the game got even faster. And so, you had to learn on the fly with a lot of things, adjust on the fly. And what you'll find out a lot of times is the best athletes play on the field. And that was my experience, you know, from college, is that, you know, by transitioning from position to position, it's obvious that I had the intelligence to be able to, you know, to read through playbooks and all whatever else. But just having that opportunity, like I said, I don't believe in luck and all whatever else, but it was really much by accident that I got an opportunity to play at a higher level, you know, at that, well, a skill position.
You know, you say it's by accident, and there's truth to that, no doubt. Mm-hmm. But listening to you talk about that story, mm-hmm. reminds me of something that we talk about with our players here in New mm-hmm. Jersey, where I coach, all the mm-hmm. time. And that mm-hmm. is be prepared. You never know yeah. when that opportunity is going to come, right? You don't yeah. know what form, what shape, when, yeah. et cetera, man, mm-hmm. you know, you could have looked at yourself and been like, "Oh, I'm fifth on the depth chart," right? Whatever, you know?
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, you were prepared when your chance came and you made the most mm-hmm. of it. And that's a lesson for all young players out there, man. You just,
yeah.
you can never approach a situation as though you won't get your shot. You always got to yeah. be ready for that.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. You got to have you got to be ready. You got to, and you got to be in the right place at the right time. So make your decisions wisely, you know, because you
for
never
sure.
know. You never
for
know.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this, man, your experience at Arkansas, but before mm-hmm. the break, I was talking about one of my friends, growing up, who played at Pitt, didn't have a great experience there. I mean, he felt very much caught up in the business aspect of it all, you know, that mm-hmm. that it was a numbers game, that guys were very often treated like, you know, sort of pawns. I mean, if you were healthy and serviceable, you mm-hmm. were treated one way, and if you weren't, you were treated another. But I know that's not a universal experience. I would say I had a great experience. I played at a mm-hmm. lower level, but I had a great experience. What was your experience like, man? Overwhelmingly positive, mixed bag, what?
I would give it a mixed bag because so coming from a junior college to a Division I program, you're re-recruited again. So it's like you're coming out of high school and they're giving you all the fanfare and all the perks and all the different reasons why you should come to their particular school to play, you know, sports for their program. So when I got there and with the new coach, it was like, okay, we're coming here to set the precedence because you guys really don't know how it is to move from the Southwest Conference, which had good programs, Texas A&M, the University of Texas and all whatever else, but into the SEC was a whole different ball game. So when I first got there, it was like, okay, you're the shiny new car, you know, you're the shiny new A, B, C, and D. But there was guys that were on the team that didn't like junior college guys coming in because they were like, okay, you're going to take one of our spots. We know why they recruited you. So the atmosphere as far as the campus with the camaraderie with the guys in the locker room lagged a lot compared to like being there as far as with the coaches, because they handpicked us. I came in from my junior college with 13 guys from different junior colleges across the country. Coffeyville, Ellsworth, my junior college, College of DuPage. There was a lot of guys that came there because they're trying to build the program up. So as far as on the field, it was great at first. The back half and why I said it's a mixed bag was because, unfortunately, I had the experience of being hurt. And when you're hurt, a lot of guys don't know that your scholarship is annual. You know, what that means is it's a year-to-year basis. So you sign off on all the information on a year-to-year deal, you know. And so I was able to retain my scholarship based on, you know, performance and all whatever else. But being hurt and not being able to want to really be around the program, I didn't want to be there. Because, you know, like I said, I'm way from Ohio. I had already had a mixed bag with dealing with guys on the squad who I'm not from the South, of course, obvious. I'm from Ohio, you know, so that's a whole nother, you know, conversation. But being there, it was like, oh man, I got more homesick. So ultimately, I left after, you know, after the injury and whatnot. And so I left two semesters early prior to me finishing my degree. But, you know, playing, being there, being in the atmosphere, big time stadiums and all whatever else. Oh, there's nothing like it. When you go to Knoxville, Tennessee, man, and you go to Oxford, Mississippi, and you know, some of the Gainesville, Florida, man, there's nothing like that stuff, man. You know, so but the ideal, I guess the thing that I want to press to anybody or especially young people that's listening to us, the guy that you have with went to the University of Pittsburgh, he's absolutely right. It is a business. But it's, you have responsibility in the business. That means you have to make sure you're academically, you're doing what you need to do. Make sure you keep your body in tip-top shape. And make sure you don't put yourself in a position where you're making horrible decisions away from the whole reason that brought you to the university anyway, which is your ability to play football. So, you know, a lot of guys get to school and, yeah, it's a business, and then they get caught up in all that other stuff, you know, where ultimately it takes away from their ability to play on the field. And sometimes that's where the mixed bag comes in. So, you know, I'm still under the belief of the consumption that you're a student athlete. You're not an athlete student, even though I know it's transitioning now more than ever. So you're there to get your education and put yourself in position. So after your playing career, whenever it finishes, regardless if it's at the Division I level or you get an opportunity to play at the next level, XFL, CFL, NFL, there's going to be ultimately an end. And so at the end, what are you going to do? And so that's where the, you know, the character things has got to come. And I think most kids, when they go to college, they find themselves in transition because they have to learn what it is to take on more character from what they already had from the high school level. And from me personally, from the junior college level.
It's interesting, man. That's great stuff. You know, it's funny. I get a lot of college recruiters in our building. Who are come looking at our players and recruiting our players. And I'm always interested in the questions they ask. I want to be able to go back to these guys that they're recruiting. And I want to be able to say to them, hey, listen, the things that they're asking me about, they don't have anything to do with football. I think the best recruiters, the first questions out of their mouth are, what kind of student is he? What's his home life like? Yep. What are his practice habits like? Mm-hmm. You know, like, is he a kid you trust? Mm-hmm. Was he a team captain? Because if the answer is like, no, he wasn't a team captain, but his film says he's a D1 kid, then that's a problem. You know, like, I mean, if you're the most talented kid and you're not a team captain, then there's a void there in terms of character, integrity, leadership, work ethic, whatever it might be. So I really like those recruiters who come in and are interested in the whole person, because as you're saying, it's about a lot more than just playing football. The football aspect is obviously important, but man, if a kid can't find his niche with his teammates, or he's so homesick, he misses his girl, he misses his family, whatever it might be, or he gets hurt and he feels alienated from the team, then obviously his play is going to suffer, man. It is about so much more than just your ability between the lines. And I think that's an aspect that gets lost on a lot of people.
Yeah. People forget how important it is for the student athlete and the holistic person to develop on a college campus. They forget. They want to, you know, of course, it's great playing in the big time stadiums and wearing the uniforms, especially, like I said, now, because these kids now, man, oh my God, if I had half the access that some of these kids have now at a Division I level, I'm like, oh my man. NIL, are you serious? Come on, man. You know, but like I said, when you go there, and you brought up a break point too, and I just want to point this out. When kids are being recruited, right? So like you said, like the captain thing, right? I was fortunate enough to play for a high school that was well known in the state. So like my quarterback was first team all state back to back years. And then my running back rushed for like 1800 yards my senior year. So those were our two offensive captains. You know, you couldn't slide in there, but there was a bunch of guys that I played with that played at the Division I and played at the collegiate level or even Division II and Division III. So we were littered with talent. So when they would come into our high school and they would talk to my head coach, Leonard Rush, he passed, you know, a few years back, one of the greatest men I ever met in my life. He would sell character for us. That was his main sale. He would be like, look, this kid's got a good mom, good dad. There's some good things going on in the house. He listens. He does well in the classroom. This is the stuff that he would tell these recruiters that would come in. And I know that from, you know, just me leaving and coming back, because the alumni is always welcome back in my high school. So that's what I think that some of the young guys or just people just in general need to know about their kids is they need to make sure that they understand your character. Your play can take you so far, but then your character is going to take you all the way through. And you have to have good character, man, because without that, they're not going to take a risk or a chance on you because only a certain amount of kids, percentage of kids, get an opportunity to play at a bigger level. So why would I invest all that if we can't win, you know? Oh, and I got to worry about you off the field, you know?
Yeah. I mean, think about the investment we're talking about too. You know, like one of our kids this past year was getting recruited by Villanova. Mm-hmm. If Villanova gives him a full ride, that's a $300,000 deal, man. Villanova's $75,000 a year, man. So they're not handing out $300,000 scholarships lately. Mm-hmm. They want to know what they're getting into, which is a nice segue to conversation I want to have with you about the draft. When you listen to a lot of these scouts talk and NFL coaches talk, and I mean I've been fortunate enough to be able to talk to some NFL coaches recently about their process. They all say that the thing that they love about the combine isn't, you know, watching these guys go through the on-field drills, et cetera. It's the opportunity to sit down with them and to talk to them one-on-one and to really begin to get a feel for who these young men are. And are they going to be able to handle, you know, A, the transition to a higher level of football, but B, the transition to wealth, you know, new money, new environment, new influences, right? You know, fame. I mean, how are they going to handle all those things? And so that becomes now another element. That's as you go from high school to college, that's one level. As you go from college to the pros, that's a whole other step up with a whole new set of circumstances that you have to master. So let me ask you this question. As we get ready to, you know, as we prepare for the NFL draft and you look at, for example, the guys at the top, the quarterbacks who are all going to be drafted or a guy that you and I love, Marvin Harrison, et cetera. How well prepared do you think these guys are for that transition? Because history tells us they're not all going to be home runs. You know, some of these guys are going to struggle on the field. Some are going to struggle off. I mean, in your experience, do you think these guys are being prepared properly for what awaits them at the next level?
I think a lot of that has to do what type of program you come from on a collegiate level. You know, so I can speak personally about what goes on in Ohio State. I think a lot of those guys, the day they show up, they know that they're first round or second round NFL draft picks. They know that. So the issue is, how are you preparing yourself to be ready to play at the next level from day one at the university? And that has a lot to do with your position coaches, as well as your head coach, and as well as your athletic department system that you have surrounded at that particular school. So it's when you have sometimes what you worry about, and I've heard this from multiple people that I know across the board that, you know, coach at multiple different levels, is that you don't worry so much about if a guy can't run a slant right route correctly, or if a guy can't do a comeback route correctly. You know, that's coaching. And that's the responsibility of coaches to coach guys up at every level. I don't care if you're a pro, you still got to get coached up. What you worry about and what the red flags is, oh, this guy's lazy at practice. Oh, this guy comes in late and he reports late. This guy's messing up and not going to study tables like he's supposed to. This guy's had this off the field thing where he's running around with his campus friends and all whatever else. And now, because there's such advanced scouting, these scouts now, man, coach, They go back to, some of them go back to elementary school. They want to know what was going on all the way from there, all the way up. And they can find, and believe what I tell you, they can find out anything that they want to know about you. They will find it out. So it's imperative that when you get at that level, you've already done some of the things that you need to do to stabilize yourself. But then now going in, I'm a multi-million dollar investment. I mean, literally, you know, tens of thousands, some of the guys' contracts are hundreds of thousands of dollars. So if they have hundreds of millions of dollars, not hundreds of thousands, hundreds of millions of dollars. So if they have an opportunity where a team is going to invest that type of money, okay, what am I doing when nobody's paying attention to what I'm doing? You know, and that's why I like, you know, you said I love Ohio State. This is one of the reasons why I love Marvin Harrison Jr. Because I know for a fact, based on who I'm connected to with the Ohio State program, there would be days and nights that my son-in-law would let Marvin in and out of the building and nobody else was there. And he was on that machine, man. And nobody was in there working with him except for him and that machine. And he's closing the building down 11, 12 o'clock at night. He wasn't going to the club. He wasn't going and hanging out. He was doing things to prepare himself for the next level. And those are the guys that you need to look for that I think have a higher chance or a higher pedigree to be like super great or be all pro or even Hall of Fame at the next level. Whereas like, if you get a guy and he's not a hard worker, he's not a leader in his room, his position room, man, red flags is going up all over the place. So
for sure.
You know, that's just, you know, my spin on it, bro.
Yeah. Let me ask you your opinion on this. I'm not going to lie. I haven't like scoured all the prospects and done a super deep dive yet on all these, all these guys in the draft. Mm-hmm. But my kind of initial opinion is if I'm looking at this draft from not from a need standpoint, but from a pure like ability standpoint and NFL ready standpoint, I think Marvin Harrison is the best player in the draft. I mean, I think that he is the most pro ready guy in the draft right now. Now the Bears aren't going to take him with the number one pick because they, you know, they got their sights on the QB.
Yeah.
But I mean, do you see another guy in the draft who's more ready to go into the NFL right now than Marvin Harrison?
Well, there's probably two more guys that I'm really, like, really pleased based on my evaluation and looking at them and knowing what they did at the collegiate level. I think Blake Bowers is going to be an unbelievable NFL pro. I mean, this kid's skill set is unmatched. I mean, I have not seen a tight end that has this much skill in a long time. You know, especially coming from that Georgia program where they had – Washington, who was a tight end for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and knowing that the Bowers was better than him. So I think he's ready and he's ready to roll. It might be a little injury thing. And so we're starting to hear that he's got little nagging injuries, but it's not soft tissue stuff going on. So I think he's just got to get with a professional trainer. But as far as skill set and ready to play on the field, I think he's ready to go. The other guy is Joe Alt. Joe Alt is going to be a Hall of Fame football player. I mean, I don't care who he plays for. You can put him on one of the worst teams in the NFL, and Joe Alt is going to be a Hall of Famer. His what he's done to get himself ready and prepared to go to the next level is unheard of, especially hearing the rumors that I've heard about what Marcus Freeman did to change his body and transform his body to make him actually look like an NFL offensive tackle. He's done an outstanding amount of work behind closed doors. And I think Joe Alt and Blake Bowers, outside of Marv, all three of them are ready to go and polished, you know, for the next level.
Interesting. So the interesting thing about Bowers and maybe what separates him a little bit, makes him a little trickier, is, you know, with an offensive tackle, for the most part, the system is not as imperative as it is for a skill player because, let's face it, man, everybody's running – inside zone, everybody's running wide zone. You know, there's three or four protections most teams use. From a scheme perspective, things are a lot more common or similar for linemen. But you get that tight end, man, the place you land, the coordinator you're with, the system they run, that really can define it, man. You know, some of those guys just don't have the creativity that others do, don't place the importance upon a tight end, especially a guy like Bowers who – If you're really believe in matchups, I mean, he can be a problem, man. You know,
nightmare in
the spot, out nightmare. Wide, in motion. You know, I mean, think about getting into a bunch set. Now you're trading that bunch to the opposite side in order to get him matched up against a linebacker. I mean, the possibilities are kind of endless with a guy like that. You get him with the wrong guy though, and you could almost squander that talent.
Mm-hmm. I.e. Kyle Pitts. I.e. Kyle Pitts in Atlanta. Kyle Pitts, I don't know if Arthur Smith was a fit for him because they never really ran 12 personnel sets like he should have been in. But with him at 11 personnel and trying to flex him out, and he wasn't willing to do a lot of the inline blocking, I hardly ever seen him run comeback routes or cross routes. So I was like, okay, what are you doing with him? He might as well be a wide receiver versus being a tight end. So, you know, I think that Bowers, I got some bias. I think that Bowers would do really good, like in a Los Angeles Chargers uniform, because I know Coach Harbaugh is going to use him the correct way, and he has potential to be really, really good his first year. But there's certain teams, like you said, Coach, that if he's in a certain system, I don't know. But I think any system for him, at least for any of the top 15 picks, is going to be a good landing spot. I would love to see him in Chicago with the 9th pick. And then they run Cole Kmet out there with Bowers and with DJ Moore. Oh, my goodness, man. And Keenan Allen, it would get ugly. It would get ugly with Caleb Williams, man. Because they could run so many different personnel sets, man. You could have – it could really be an 11 – and it looked like a 12. And then you could flip that and then flex him in the backfield. Now it looks like 21. So, I mean, it's like, man, what could you not do with him? He's a chess piece. So,
well, that's the game, man. That's the game. That's offensive football, is being able to be as multiple as you can without having to substitute. And that's why you're seeing the value of these athletic hybrid-type tight ends really skyrocket, because they are those pieces, especially the ones who are willing to block. That's probably the difference between a Bowers and a Kyle Pitts, because you can put Blake Bowers with his hand down, you know, and then you can split him out wherever the hell you want to split him out, you know, and have that similar effectiveness. Boy, to be able to do that kind of multiplicity is really hard to defend. Yeah, you talk to defensive coordinators. What do you hate as a defensive coordinator? Well, you hate teams that unbalance you. You hate teams that get the defense out of structure. You hate all that pre-snap movement. When you got versatile guys who you can move around in order to reconfigure the defense to create the matchups that you want, man, that's great offensive football. And that's why guys like Bowers, as you're suggesting, are so valuable.
Yeah, yeah. Shoot, I mean, if you catch them jokers in single high, it's over. It's over. With Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, and Blake Bowers, and they're in single high, somebody's toast. I don't know who it is. His slot corner, out of wide side corner, safety, I don't know. Somebody's out of here. So, you know. That's why I like those sets.
Well, that's my hope. That's my hope for the Steelers this year. But that's another conversation, man. Mm-hmm. Like, run it well enough to force defenses into single high, and then beat them when they do. You know. So, but that's another conversation. All right, listen. I got a lot more I want to talk to you about as far as the draft goes. But we're running long on time. So before the draft, you know, you got to come back so we can hit up on some of these NFL draft topics. And get to some of the stuff that we didn't get to. But before we go, man, tell the listeners what you're up to. You're doing a bunch of podcasts on FFSN. Give them a little shout out to some of the stuff you're doing.
Yeah, thanks again, Coach, for inviting me on the show, man. I'd love to come back, man. And just like you said, talk draft, man. But you guys can catch me, you know, on Wednesdays on the Pump Your Brakes podcast with Shannon White and Tate Boy Fresh. You know, we're every Wednesday on Steel Curtain Network, Fans First Sports Network. On Fridays, I'm on the Homies Podcast and the Homies Overtime. The Homies Overtime is broadcasted on Fans First Sports Network, on audio and video on YouTube. The Homies Podcast is on Steel Curtain Network. On Sundays, I'm on the Know-It-Alls Podcast, which is now broadcast on Fans First Sports Network with my boy Mod and my boy Tate Boy Fresh. Mondays, I'm on with Andy P from the college football side of Fans First Network on the Level Up Podcast. And then I do a That's Rather Cavaliers, Cleveland Cavaliers with my boy Tate Boy Fresh. And I got a couple of things in the chamber that I might be on the audio side doing something here in a minute. So I'm doing a lot already, but we're going to keep it pushing and get this network built out the way it needs to be.
Yeah, man. 1 year in the books. It was a good first year. So we're moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
So, Sean, keep up the great work, man. I really appreciate you coming on. To all the listeners out there, right? Week 3 of free agency will get underway soon. And this is where you can find some diamonds in the rough, some veterans maybe on some cheaper contracts. Teams can still build out their roster. So going to be a lot to talk to. And as we lead up to the draft, we'll have Sean back. So hope everybody has a great week out there. For Kevin Smith, this is episode 49 of The Call Sheet. Take care, everybody.